My name is Bruce Garrison. I'm one of the pastors here at the Dwelling Place. I do primarily outreach stuff. And it so happens that tonight I'm talking. This is going to be more some thoughts rather than a serious message. I think I've got one primary thought, and then stuff's just going to kind of swirl around, and we're going to look at things from a few different angles. Hopefully it doesn't swirl too much. We talk about a point of origin as a place where we're starting, but where we actually hope to get away from. In the case of my map, which first let me say has no symbolic meaning whatsoever, it's just random. It just happened to be a good outline, and it happens to go from Cincinnati to somewhere in South Korea, but there's no spiritual meaning whatsoever, just so you know that. But we start at a place, and we are going somewhere else, usually. Until we start to talk about the spiritual life, what we begin to find that actually the place where we begin, our point of origin, actually ends up becoming our destination. And as the quote that we started with says, after all our travels, we find that where we started is actually where we end up. And in this case, of course, that place is Jesus. You find that the Bible is full of thoughts about origin. Beginnings, it's a very important concept. Genesis 1:1 tells us that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Tonight, we're celebrating the origin of two new lives who have entered the world and now are beginning their journey and all that's going to mean in the world that we live now. But there was a purpose when God started and he created. He had a thought in mind. And so there was this beginning that he would have this world, that he would operate in concert with humanity. And so he began everything. And the New Testament tells us in John 1:1, that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And Jesus is that living logos. He is that Word. He's that point of origin for everything that's going to come. A lot of times we, especially if you have grown up in the church or if you have a life in the church, you have possibly grown up back, especially if you're a little more my age and you grew up in the 60s and 70s. A lot of the stuff that went on had to do with redemption, and we had a lot of really amazing testimonies. And for a while back in the 70s, it was almost a case of, can you top this? And so one guy would have a really horrific past life, and he would come to the church and tell you his story and all the bad stuff he was in. And then a few weeks later, a new book would come out and a new book and a new book. And we kind of got very caught up in what we had been in, but we didn't really know where we were going. And A.W. Tozer said it's very important to remember not only what you were saved from, but what you were saved to. And as this church repeats over and over and over, God's first act was creation. Before he ever started redeeming, he created. And this quote from Terence Fretham I find really interesting, because he says that basically the objective in God's work in redemption is to free people to be what they were created to be. You and I have been given a purpose. There is something that God wants to do, and salvation is his taking us and guiding us into the fullness of that eternal purpose. He created us in the image of God to become these people who are displaying that. That's what creation was. And everything that we're working toward now is to see the fulfilling of that. And if you go back into the Old Testament story of the Garden of Eden, you know that Adam and Eve started this process, and then somebody comes along and starts asking this question. Did God really say that? Do you think that's what he really meant? Do you think that's what you're really supposed to do? And Adam and Eve started thinking, well, I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe we can figure this out ourselves. Maybe we could do things our own way. Maybe we've got a better plan. And the trouble starts when man turns away from God as his point of origin and starts putting himself in as the point of origin. Because then he starts creating his own understanding of good and evil, right and wrong. He begins to question everything. And as he creates his own system, he continues to drift further and further away from that original point of origin. And the Bible talks about this as being eating from the knowledge of the tree of good and evil, or the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That's where we start. German theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer said it like this. He said, the origin is that man was made in the image of God. And as the image of God, man draws his life entirely from that origin in God. But the man who thinks he has become like God has forgotten how he was at his origin. And he has made himself his own creator and judge. That's a lot of times what we do. We kind of want to put ourselves in that place of being our own judge. And we start establishing our own standards, our own routine, and we start getting everything moving like that. And so basically what happens is we come to this point and we have to decide which way are we going to take here. Because instead of just living in this life with God, instead of always looking to him as our basis, now we're kind of thinking, well, maybe this is it, maybe that's it. And the problem is, though, as we begin to have this situation of our own origin of spiritual existence, we start to experience separation. And it creates a disunion with God, with other people, with things around us, and then finally with ourselves. And it's like life just starts doing this. And a lot of times you may be like the guy here where life has just kind of left you scratching your head. And you're not sure really which direction we're supposed to go with this whole thing. This is kind of the situation that when Jesus showed up on the earth, he found himself in. Only it had kind of developed into not just somebody who wasn't sure which way to go. It was this enormous religious system where for centuries, laws upon laws and then laws to interpret the laws that were then interpreted by other laws that gave interpretations of the laws, all to prove that those guys were right, that they were the ones in the place of superiority. And it had gotten pretty intense. There was a group of people called the Pharisees who were the religious leaders of the time. And I guess you could kind of put it this way. The Pharisee could be described as one who devotes his entire life to the knowledge of good and evil, and then who harshly judges himself and his neighbor. All the time he's honoring God, but at the same time he's actually in disunion from the very God whose cause he is defending. If you follow all that. Probably the best example is there's a story in Luke chapter 18 of two people who were praying. One was a man who all he said was, God, I'm a sinner. Please be merciful to me. He knew his condition, and that's where he was. There was another man, a Pharisee in the room, who thanked God for how good he was and kind of gave God his own judgment of all the good things he was doing all the time. And then he thanked God for the fact that he could pass that judgment on himself. And that was kind of the embodiment of this huge system that Jesus came to, where the religious life was just so complicated and so intense. And there were so many things you had to try to do to get everything right. And Jesus shows up. And he comes and says, what we've got to do is get back to the original point of origin. And that happens to be me. I am what you are looking for in terms of a spiritual life. I am the basis of everything you are hoping to find in terms of this life. He reintroduces what it means to live with God. He begins to display God as God is toward us. And he begins to find himself repeatedly in conflict with the religious leaders of the day who had spent all these decades and even millennia creating a system of us versus them. And now you've got this guy, Jesus, who says, that's not what God's like. It looks different. So you have in the New Testament conflict after conflict. And you see what happens is when you set yourself up as the religious authority, well, the first thing you have to do is show why you are the religious authority and why you're right and everybody else isn't. And that usually has to be quantifiable somehow. So you set up this system and you get a create a system of standards and checklists and all these things. And you can decide who's in and who's out based on who's doing what. So people kept pushing Jesus. They would say, well, what do you think about this situation? What would you do in that situation? If this comes up, how do you handle it? And if you really read the New Testament carefully, you find that a lot of times, if you didn't know better, you would think Jesus didn't understand the question. Because the answer just kind of goes, whoop. Or he totally evades the question altogether and starts talking to the person about their own situation or their own character. He just kind of refuses to get dragged into this huge religious debate. He avoids either or situations a lot of the times. He looks at what it means to become as opposed to just do. And this whole life character begins to develop. And it seems that a lot of times he does stuff intentionally to push the standards and the barriers. One Sabbath day, he and his disciples are out in a cornfield. They're not supposed to pick anything on the Sabbath, but the disciples start eating corn right there, and he doesn't stop them. Now, it's likely they wouldn't have starved that day and died there in the cornfield, but Jesus kind of makes it a thing. There's a woman who's been sick for 18 years. One more day probably wouldn't have made that big a difference, but Jesus heals her on the Sabbath. It's like he's continually just pushing, just showing that this is bigger than rules and regulations that become the end-all, the be-all, everything. The temple, which is everything to the Jewish people at that time, he completely redefines what it is and why it's there and what its purpose is. And he ties all that stuff to himself. So over and over and over, you've got this guy saying, everything you think this is supposed to look like, it doesn't. It's different. And of course, the response is pretty intense. To those who are enmeshed in this complicated and rigid system, Jesus is the one who has lost his way. He's an egotist. He's a liberal. He's a lone ranger, and ultimately, he is a blasphemer of God to the religious system. But in reality, he is establishing the origin of the life for all those who choose to follow God. He is actually saying, it all comes back to me. It all comes back to this location. Fullness, wholeness, abundant life starts here. So, to those who are intent on judging, Jesus says, don't judge. Because if you judge, you're going to be judged. And he says, you may be doing this in the name of God, but you have lost sight of the nature of God. Because what you don't realize, in John 3:17 says this, Jesus tells them, I didn't come to condemn the world, but to actually save the world. See, it's always been one of the things, if you've grown up in the church, you probably know John 3:16, and I never understood why we stopped at 16 and didn't go on to 17, where Jesus says, I didn't come to condemn the world, but to actually save the world. That's what I'm doing. That's my purpose. That's why I'm here. Judgment invariably creates separation, and Jesus comes with this message of reconciliation. So we find him among the tax collectors, the prostitutes, the sinners, the drunkards, the people that if you're a really good religious person, you're not supposed to be around. You see him being questioned by the religious authorities. Well, if you really knew what that person's like, you wouldn't be around them. If you really knew what that person's like, you wouldn't let her do that. You wouldn't let her wash your feet. You would stay away from her. And situations still come up similar like this now. Shane found himself in a situation this week where, I won't give you the details, but a guy was getting bombarded on Facebook. He declared himself an atheist, and it was like a religious free-for-all. People were just pounding this guy over an issue, and they had kind of lost sight of the humanity of the person, and it had become all about issues and judgment and stuff. So Shane reached out to the atheist attorney that was just being pounded by numerous religious people on all kinds of stuff. And the guy actually turned around and liked his Facebook page. You start there and see how it goes. It's kind of funny. But we find ourselves, when we see Jesus as our point of origin, we find ourselves in that situation where we actually are sometimes rooting for the guy that maybe people wouldn't think we'd be rooting for. And we're reaching out to the ones that maybe it seems we wouldn't be. But that's what happens, because here's the thing you always have to remember. If you are your own point of origin, it's never just you. You see, your judgment is never just your judgment. And your reading of the scriptures is never just your reading of the scriptures. You have a culture. You have a history. You have an economic standing. You have educational privileges or lack of privileges. You have family history. You have all this stuff that combines to go into how you see things. And the thing is, every single one of us has that. Nobody is immune from that. So when we say, well, this is my judgment and I'm pretty sure it's the right one, and I'm pretty sure this is the living word of God, it's possible there's a whole lot of other stuff involved in that. There was a guy named Karl Barth in Germany a few decades ago, and he kind of described it this way. He says, what was and is the apostasy in the Church of Jesus Christ? Is it not an again and again the refusal to let Jesus Christ be Jesus Christ? Is it not the attempt to set up alongside him a specifically Christian righteousness, holiness, and vitality? And for all its appearance of obedience, this attempt is profoundly disobedient. It always involves secularization, an inevitable surrender of faith and love and hope, the betrayal of the church and its message and order to the powers and values and principles of the world. Isn't that kind of crazy? The stuff that seems to be the really good obedience sometimes in reality is disobedience to what God's wanting to do. You see, Jesus took that kind of a religious system and he kind of turned it completely on its head. And he said, it's not about this huge system of rules and regulations and what do you do on this day and that day and this day and how often do you pray and what all the things that you're doing. But he said, actually, it's about me. It's about that you would know me. I am your standard. I am the basis of your spiritual life. And he goes so far to tell these people, apart from me, you can't do anything. I am really the basis of your spiritual life. So life begins with him. Richard Rohr kind of says it this way. He says a lot of Christians don't even know what we mean when we talk about a gospel life or a spiritual life, because Christianity has become nothing more than a belief and a belonging system. It's no longer a full lifestyle. So we just kind of think if we get in line with the right rules, the right regulations, everything will work out. But we're called to live day after day in cooperation with God, to live in union with him. Now, I have to tell you, it is actually more difficult and it takes a little more effort to live in union with God than to say, well, I've got these 12 things. I believe them. If you don't believe them, then I'm sorry. You're ill. I'm in. And we're done. And we turn it into this contest of who can believe most of the things on the list, as opposed to learning what it means to day by day start life with God, to realize that every day he's got something new, he's got something exciting. As our point of origin, as our beginning, he's got a whole new thing in mind for us, but we begin to move into that. That takes more effort, but that is actually what it means to walk in the Spirit, where you're actually learning to hear what the voice of God says. And what happens is a transformational process begins. And Paul in Romans 12 talks about having our minds renewed, where we actually begin to see things differently. And for all of us, it's a process. Stuff goes on. I have a friend in California who's kind of scientifically minded, and she assures me that the second stage where it's all white, the caterpillar is actually just a bunch of goop, primordial ooze, before the life form starts developing. You may tell me that's right or not. I don't know. More or less. I should have checked that out with you. And sometimes I think we sort of feel like that's where we are. There's not a whole lot going on. You can't see much beauty. Life's just sort of goopy. And there's no real thing going on. But when Christ becomes the basis of our life, when he's our origin, when he's our destination, then everything begins to change, because our questions are not any longer, well, what do you think on this, and this issue? Do you smoke? Do you drink? Do you chew? Do you go out with girls who do? But rather it becomes, is Jesus the point of your origin? Is he the place of your life? Is he where you're actually getting your sustenance and your life flow from? And growth begins to develop and we are transformed. A little bit at a time. Sometimes it's not very evident to you, or maybe to anybody else for that matter. But something's going on, and this process is developing where there is this new life occurring over and over. There's a guy from the early church fathers, Josh, this is for you, who has this incredible thought regarding the way God works with us day after day. And he says, I will not say that the just one is born from God only once, but the just man is born from God always. According to each good deed, God engenders the just one in each of these. If then the Lord is always generated from the Father, so are you always born of God if you have the spirit of sonship. With each good work, each of your thoughts, and thus born, you will be continually born a child of God in Christ Jesus. We tend to look at born again as being something that happens one time. You signed a card probably, you said a few words, somebody prayed with you, and now you're kind of left on your own and you're supposed to figure out what it means to be a good Christian. You'll probably change your language some, you'll learn the words to some choruses, somebody will help you pray, you'll get a Bible, you'll start to read it, but you're supposed to just kind of do it. But what Origen's talking about is something completely different. And I would suggest that Paul says the same thing in Philippians, where he says, work out your salvation with fear and trembling, because it is God who is at work in you. Think about it. We tend to live in the guilt world. We tend to live in the, oh, I'm not doing it right. I keep messing up here. And we forget that there are so many things that God is birthing in us day after day. The good thoughts, the kind gestures, the smiles, the gratitude, the thank you to somebody who's waiting on us. God is working in you over and over and over, and there's this transformation going on. And it's this awesome life that doesn't just happen once. But if you were to stop, I know we always tend to think if I do a day of self-examination, we tend to focus on, oh, I kicked the cat twice, and I yelled at my coworker once, and swore two times, and ate too much ice cream, and we think of all the bad stuff. What if you were to take a day and say, okay, wow, I actually did that, I did that, I thought that, I thought that, that was a good thought, I prayed for that person. God was being born in me a whole bunch of times, and I didn't even realize it. I didn't even stop to think about it. There's this whole other perspective of life that comes when we begin to see that Christ himself is the very origin of who we are. And I would suggest it begins to look like a rushing river full of all kinds of color and all kinds of life. Jesus talks about the wind of the Holy Spirit who goes wherever it will. And so this life, this metamorphosis, this renewal, this transformation, it's something, it's living, it's dynamic. It's not a fixed set of laws, a fixed set of rules or principles or political stance on 12 issues. But it's a life that is flowing and is moving and has reality. I want to tell you a quick story. Last night, Debbie and I were guests of the Carmel Mosque for what they call their iftar. This month is the month of Ramadan for Muslims, and they don't eat from dawn till night. We didn't know that at 7 o'clock when it was supposed to start, that dinner wouldn't be till 9:14, exactly. But we were sitting with a couple from the mosque and we got talking. She told us she was a doctor. We said, oh, where are you a doctor? St. Vincent's, I work in the women's area. I said, oh, we have a doctor at our church who works in that area kind of too. Oh, what's his name? I said, Monty Harrison is a doctor there. This woman's face lit up and she smiled. She said, oh, I know Dr. Harrison very well. Then she made a comment that absolutely floored me. She said, every doctor I know in surgery or NICU, the newborn intensive care unit, always hopes they get Dr. Harrison because he is so kind and he is so caring. And I thought, Debbie and I left and I said, oh, I am so going to use that tomorrow night. Because I thought, here in this hospital where there's pain, there's uncertainty, there's darkness, people don't know what tomorrow's going to hold, there is this little river of God that shows up in the form of Monty Harrison. And if you've ever heard Monty talk about the way he approaches his anesthesiology, it's unbelievable the way he sees these kids. But there is this river of God that is touching this hospital. And there are so many others in this room, I could go story after story after story. But when you focus on Christ as the origin of your life, it's not about, well, before I can be nice to you, I need to know what you think about these three issues. And do you shop at Target? It doesn't come down to that kind of stuff. But it's about, you know what? I am in cooperation with Jesus. And he is here to bring you life. And he is here to bring you healing. And he is to be all that you can need in this situation. And so that becomes the basis of who we are. I want to move this along because it starts to affect our conscience. And instead of us being regulated by the rights and wrongs, and oh, I feel guilty because I didn't do this enough times, Paul the Apostle even says, I am not sure who should judge me. I don't care if anybody judges me. I don't even judge myself. He says, I'm not aware of anything against me, but I don't know that that makes me right. I love that. And I never really understood this until I started really understanding what it means to walk with only Jesus as your standard. That doesn't mean you forget all the other stuff. But it means you're not worried about that so much, whether you've created the 10 items you're supposed to cross off for that day, but you're actually living out a relationship with him. Because how do you quantify the wind of the Spirit? How do you quantify a rushing river that is touching lives wherever it goes? How do you determine if you've been righteous enough or not? Boy, good luck with that. But we come to a place where we are living in that relationship with Christ. And because of that, it's not about whether we're right or wrong, but it's about living with him. Jesus even tells a story of the sheep and the goats. And that there will be people on the final day, and Jesus will say, you did all these things for me. And they'll say, well, when did we do that? We don't know. We didn't know we did any of that stuff for you. And he will say, whenever you did it for the least of these, when you were feeding them, when you were clothing them, when you were visiting them in prison, when they were sick and you took care of them, you were doing those things for me. And it will not register on their minds because that has not been the basis of what they were doing. So I guess I want to tell you, I want to finish with this particular thought, that we come to Jesus, who is the beginning and the completion of our faith. Hebrews 11 is this huge chapter of all kinds of superhero events in the Old Testament and guys who have done miraculous things and they believed all this stuff. And you kind of think, how could I ever get there? And the author of Hebrews says, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and the sin that clings so closely, and let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us. Looking to Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. A lot of translations say the author and the finisher. So who for the sake of the joy that was set before him endured the cross, disregarding its shame, and has taken his seat at the right hand of the throne of God. There are all kinds of things in this world that can cause us to look in different directions. there are a lot of things that will try to distract us. But the writer of Hebrews says, look past that stuff. The implication of the Greek for look to Jesus is actually to look away to Jesus. In other words, there are times when there are things that are in front of us and we are to look past them, almost as if we're looking through a net. Sometimes we can allow situations to become so big that we forget God's out there. A lot of those situations are in our own lives. And they're our own selves. And we think, man, I don't know how I could ever get past this. But we're to look past. We're almost to look through. The guy that wrote The Cloud of Unknowing in the 14th century, he described it that you are in communion with Jesus. And then all of a sudden, somebody jumps in between you and kind of blocks your view. And he says, what you want to do is just look over their shoulder. Keep looking. Don't turn it into a thing. Don't let your focus become that. But keep looking at Christ. And I think for many of us, that is the call that God has for us, that we just keep learning what it means to look past. I'm not saying there aren't dark days, and I'm not saying sometimes the color in your river isn't a dark gray or even a black. Sometimes those things will come along. But in the midst of all that, the river of God keeps flowing, and he keeps working, and he keeps changing, and he keeps transforming, and he keeps bringing us to the place where we see him. So I want to finish with this last quote. A lot of people in their lives, I guess, have what they call their life verse. I've heard people say, well, this is my life verse, or this is my verse for the year. I guess you could say I have a life quote. And I went rifling through in the very first magazine I ever published in England in 1990. This was the very last quote I had on the magazine. It's from Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and he says this: the way is unutterably hard, and at every moment we are in danger of straying from it. If we regard this way as one we follow in obedience to an external command, if we are afraid of ourselves all the time, it is indeed an impossible way. But if we hold Jesus Christ going before us step by step, we shall not go astray. If we worry about the dangers that beset us, if we gaze at the road instead of him who goes before, we are already straying from the path. For he is himself the way, the narrow way, and the straight gate. And he alone is our journey's end. We start at this point and we think, wow, we're going to make this spiritual transformation and we're going to grow and we're going to change. And we find that as we do that, he who was our starting point is also our destination. And he is the completion of everything that he has for us, the life that he calls us to. So I would just encourage you to take a minute before we sing another song and consider what in most days is your point of origin. What are you living out of? Is it a life in union with Christ? Is it you trying to figure out your own system, your own way of working things? Have you gotten completely entangled in religious structures and who's right, who's wrong, who's got the right point, who doesn't? Or is there this sense of I'm on a journey, I'm in this movement, and the very place that I have started, the person of Jesus Christ, is also the place where I'm going to finish, as he continues to just birth this new life in me over and over again.